morning, guys. How are you all doing today? Somebody's doing fantastic. That's good to hear. I'm doing pretty well myself. Welcome to the Buell Planetarium, Carnegie Science Center, and to our semi-annual SciTech Days. Are you guys enjoying yourselves so far? Yeah, learning some cool stuff? Getting some cool stuff? Okay, don't lose that stuff. Our chairs like to eat things, so before you leave us, be sure you haven't lost any of your goodies that you've taken from some of our professionals here, okay? Alright, so before we get everything kicked off, I just have a few brief reminders for you all. If at any point during the show you need to exit the dome, just follow these lit handrails that you see along the walls to these exit doors that are on my right, your left, not the ones you came in, the ones over here. So everybody point to the exit doors you're going to want to use at any point. Awesome, right over here. So just know that if you do exit during the show, the doors are going to lock behind you, and you will not be able to get back in. So if you have to leave us, number one, be sure that you have a chaperone with you. And number two, be sure, like I said, you've checked around your seat and our chairs haven't eaten anything of yours, because our chairs do like to take things, especially if they're small and expensive. So wallets, keys, phones, iPods, anything that you value, be sure that it's not loose in your pockets and fair game for our greedy seats. Now, speaking of some of those items like cell phones or iPods or any type of camera that you may have, anything that flashes, glows, or sends a signal, please keep that tucked away and out of use for the entire presentation. The dome above our heads is highly reflective, which means that if you were to take out your phones and text and tweet to all of your friends about how awesome this presentation is, you would be correct, but we would see every text message that you sent. And that's just bad news. We want to keep it dark in here so you guys can have the best presentation possible. And also, that will eliminate any extra bleeps, beeps, and buzzes that would be distracting to your neighbors and to our guests today. So, on to the presentation. Your workshop is entitled Robotics, 3D Printing, and More. So, first of all, everybody is in the correct place. This is what you're expecting to see? Yes? Good? Thumbs up? All right, perfect. Now, unfortunately, our original presenter that was scheduled for today could not be with us, but instead, she has recommended a replacement, and that is Mr. Jake Marsico. He is Master of Tangible Interaction Design candidate at Carnegie Mellon University, and he's been kind enough to step in. And what he's going to talk to you about today is a lot of the cool things that robots are capable of doing. You're going to hear a lot of information and demonstrations about how robotics is applied in crafts, tectonics, aesthetics, interaction, and architecture, just to name a few. And you're also going to see how they translate between digital and analog systems as well. So without further delay, please welcome Mr. Jake Marsico to the podium.
Hello, can everybody hear me? If you can't hear me, can you raise your hand? No, I know you. All right. Like Lindsay said, my name is Jake Marsico. I'm a master's candidate at Carnegie Mellon University. And the program that I'm in is called Tangible Interaction Design. And we can talk about that a bit later if you're interested. I won't go into great detail right now. Maybe you'll get a sense of what we do throughout the presentation. Turn my computer back on. So I work in an area... I work in a lab called the Code Lab, and that stands for Computational Design Lab. And we will talk a little bit about what that is. So I'm going to start my presentation from the beginning. Unmirror my displays. Sorry for the setup time. Okay. So I've named this presentation Robot Things. I'm not a roboticist, but I use a lot of the technologies and techniques that roboticists use for my work. So the subtitle is, What Can We Learn From Robotics? And kind of just an overview of what I'm going to talk about today. First, I want to know about you guys a bit. And we have these nice buttons on the arms of our chairs, so there's going to be a bit of a survey component to this. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I do, show you some videos. We're going to try to define what a robot is in very broad terms. We're going to look at sensing, and we're going to talk a little bit about computer vision. I have a few demos. I've got a Kinect here. I've got a webcam here. And then there will be a question and answer at the end. But just because the question and answer is at the end doesn't mean you can't ask questions during the presentation. So please, please do raise your hand or call out a question if you have one while I go. Is that good for everybody? Doesn't sound too boring. I hear some bored yes. It'll get more exciting. It'll be fun. All right, so first thing, I want to know what about you guys. So the first question, Lindsay, if you could bring up the first question. All right. See, you've got real-time control. That's neat. All right, so the first question is, do you guys know how to program? Yes?
No.
Sort of. All right, just click it one time, and we'll go through. So is that everybody? Yes? No. Sort of. Okay, so let's hold it there. It looks like the majority of you do not know how to program. So, Lindsay, can we get the next question? Mm-hmm. All right, do you want to get better at writing code? If you don't know how to write code, do you want to get better at it?
Yes, no, or you don't really care.
Okay, let's stop it there. It looks like everyone had a chance to press it 4 or 5 times. All right. So it looks like a lot of you want to get better at it. Some of you don't want to get better at writing code, and some of you don't really care. What's that? The majority don't really care? Is that what it was? Is that the majority? Maybe I'm too optimistic. All right, if you said you don't really care, does anyone want to say why they don't really care? It does take a lot of time. That's a really good point. Anyone else? That's also true. I mean, that goes back to what he said, right? It takes a lot of time.
I don't know what codes are.
You don't know what codes are. Well, that can be fixed. That can be fixed. All right, well, I'm not going to try to convince you to get into writing code, but it is a really fun skill to have. It's really useful, too. And if you can get over the time thing and the frustration thing, which is what you're talking about, which all comes down to patience, right, then I think a lot of people really enjoy it. And that was my thing. I didn't start writing code until about a year and a half ago, right? And I'm 31 years old. It took me that long to get enough patience to actually sit down and not pull my hair out. I don't know what that says about me. But anyways, okay, so that's what we know about you guys. Most of you don't know how to code. For those of you who do know how to program, can you raise your hand? What languages do you guys write in?
HTML?
Java? C++? Scratch? All right, cool. I do a lot of my work in what was called Arduino. Have any of you guys ever played with Arduino? Yeah? That's kind of like a C language. I also do a lot of work in C++, someone said already. But that really matters, what language it is. So I'm going to talk about me a little bit and where I came from and how I got here. Before I got to Carnegie Mellon, I was a project manager for a software team at a company in Pittsburgh called ModCloth. You guys ever heard of that? Anyone?
Yeah.
They sell, it's an online retailer. They sell women's clothing. And what I liked most about that job was working with the engineers, right? Solving problems. And before that, an undergraduate, I studied religion, right? That has nothing to do with technology, or at least it didn't in school. But I found that the engineering side of things is really where I wanted to be, because there's always a new problem to solve, and I really like the idea of having a right or wrong answer. The approach that you take to get the answer to a technical problem isn't always the same, but there usually is a right or wrong answer, right? Like, it either works or it doesn't work, and that's a really nice feeling to not have that ambiguity. So at the same time I was a project manager, I was also Can you guys hear me? Oh, yeah, right. So, sorry. At the same time I was a project manager, I was also doing installation art and interactive art. And that's where I learned a lot of the technologies that kind of fuse the physical and the digital world. And that's what I'm going to talk more about today. I'm going to show you a few quick videos of some of the things that I've been working on lately, just to give you an idea of what I'm interested in. All right, so this is a prototype for a larger project I'm working on. It's a grid of lights, and this is what's called generative art or algorithmic art. So what's happening here is the pattern that these lights are making, you will never see the same pattern twice, okay? And it's based all on a single algorithm. Who here knows what an algorithm is? Yeah? Okay, that's a lot of you. We can talk more about algorithms later, but in general, my take on what an algorithm is a series of formulas that produce an outcome. It's another way of saying mapping or thinking, and we'll get to those things later. So this is one thing I'm working on. This is a project I worked on this summer in Lawrenceville on Butler Street. I'll show you a little bit of the process of making this thing. That was kind of an architectural application of some robotics technologies applied to an art installation. And we'll kind of see how some of those technologies work later. And then this is another architectural application. This is an architectural model of what could be a reactive pavilion that reacts to changing light. This uses a couple different things from robotics. There's sensing in this project, right? We're using light sensors to see where the light is in relation to this pavilion. Some of the mechanics that we're using are taken from robotics. There are servo motors inside of there that are pushing the wings up and down. And then this also is using some of the techniques from a field called soft robotics. Have any of you guys ever heard of soft robotics? Yeah? You know, what are soft robotics? A lot of the soft robotics is kind of using softer materials in robotics, in the mechanics of robotics, right? Like, how can we make a machine that is not so hard and rigid and make it useful? Okay, so the next thing I want to do is I want to ask you a few questions. We're going to try to narrow down onto what exactly a robot is, right? Like, how can we actually define a robot? I know there's this huge robots exhibit out there, so you've all been exposed to different types of robots, but we're going to look at a couple different videos. We're going to use the armchair, the arm question and answer machine, and we're going to figure out what a robot is. All right, so Lindsay, if you could bring up that next question. All right. Is this a robot? I'm gonna play this one. This is Asimo. Have you guys all seen videos of Asimo before? He's a pretty famous robot built by Honda. Looks kind of like a person, walks like a person, moves its head like a person. It looks like everyone thinks that for the most part this is a robot, right? Anyone want to offer why it's not a robot? No? Okay, yeah, this is a robot. It might be a person in a costume. That's very true. All right. This next one, again, next question. It's the same question. Is this a robot? Yes, this is a robot. The person who's getting the massage here and who made this project is Madeline Gannon, who was originally tapped to do this presentation. She's a colleague of mine. We work in the same lab. This is something she did a few years ago. So it looks like everyone thought that this was a robot. Next one. Is this a robot?
This is the iRobot Roomba vacuum cleaning robot. It has unique iAdapt technology, meaning it doesn't just move in straight lines. It makes over 60 decisions every second and adapts between cleaning modes to give you clean floors every day. The Roomba from iRobot.
Okay, it looks like pretty much everyone thought that this was a robot. A few people said no. Anyone want to offer a reason why it's not a robot? It might be remote controlled. Is a remote controlled thing a robot? Yep. It doesn't exist? What does that mean? What do you mean it doesn't exist? It was all Photoshop? Maybe you can't trust anything anymore. Yeah? All right, did everybody hear what he said?
No.
He said that in the video, it said that it made over 60 decisions, what, a minute, a second? A second, right? So that is, we could say it's thinking, right? It's making decisions. What it's making decisions about, we're not quite so sure. It doesn't tell us, but that's a good thing to remember. All right, this next slide is a little... It's a little more difficult to answer. So let's see. This is an art piece by one of my favorite artists. His name is Rafael Lozano Hemmer, and it's called Tape Recorders. Can anybody try to explain what's happening here? Does everybody get what's happening? Yeah, you right there. So did everybody hear what he said? I think I'm going to paraphrase what you said, but I think you nailed it. This system, let's just call it system for now, is sensing where the people are. Oops. And whenever somebody is standing in front of one of these tape measures, it pushes the tape measure up and up and up until it falls over, right? Is that about what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the simple version, all right? So, let's see. Looks like 55 of you say, yes, it is. 26 say no, and 12 say maybe. That's pretty good numbers. All right, so what is a robot, right? Like, we know a lot of you think that this is a robot. We saw some things that most of you are sure is a robot. What is a robot? This is what Wikipedia tells us. A robot is a mechanical or virtual agent, usually an electromechanical machine that is guided by a computer program or electronic circuitry. That's a pretty wide definition. That's a really wide definition. It can be mechanical or virtual. What's a virtual agent? Anybody? A computer program? Software? Is it hardware? Probably not. Maybe artificial intelligence. Are there any games that have virtual agents? Yeah? Call of Duty, right? Have you guys ever heard of, like, bots, right? What's a bot on the web, right? Okay, so maybe that's a robot. And it's controlled by a computer program or electronic circuitry. But this is a very broad definition. I want to narrow it down just a bit to something more like this, right? And I think a lot of you have probably heard this system before. It's something that senses and then it thinks, or I usually use the term maps, that information, and then it has an output, or it's acting. So there's the sensing, thinking, acting model, or the sensing, mapping, output model. But it's essentially the same thing. The idea is that a robot is something that takes in information from the physical world, it does something to that information in the digital world, and then it outputs that information back into the physical world. Right? And it's this loop that I'm very interested in, and my colleagues in the code lab are interested in. And we applied this idea of robotics, this definition of robotics, we apply it to architecture, to art, to design. How many of you have heard of the Nest? You know, that little thermostat Nest, right? That's a very good example of how robotics has got into the world of consumer design, right? How many of you have not heard about the Nest thermostat? All right, so basically this is a thermostat. You know what a thermostat is, right? Something that controls the heat in your house, the temperature in your house. And it senses whether or not you are in the house. It senses when you turn the heat up, when you turn the heat down, and it maps all of that information and it becomes a really smart thermostat. And the output of the thermostat is the temperature of your house, right? So this is kind of like a robot, or it uses robotic ideas. So what I'm going to talk about now is sensing a bit. We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to go into a demo, and we're going to bring it full circle into a full robotics-type system. Any questions so far? No? Okay. So these are all sensors. Right? Let's talk about what they do very quickly. In the upper left is a proximity sensor. Anybody have an idea of what a proximity sensor does? Yeah? Exactly. The distance of something, right? In relation to this. Have you guys ever used proximity sensors? There's one on display out in the robotics exhibit, if you guys haven't seen it. It's pretty fun to play with. All right, lower left-hand corner is a flex sensor. Any idea what a flex sensor does? Right, exactly. Pretty simple. What could you use this for? Yeah? Synthetic limbs? Yeah. Exactly. They make some pretty wild gloves where you have a flex sensor on each one of your fingers, And so the computer knows not only when each finger is bending, but how much that finger is bending. Okay, in the middle is a thermistor. Tells you the temperature of something. They use this a lot. This particular image is used on pipes, right? So if you have a machine that needs to keep a liquid at a constant temperature, then you would use a thermistor to tell you what the actual temperature of that liquid is, and then you can adapt. In the lower right, you have a motion sensor. How many of you guys have ever encountered something that has a motion sensor in it? Probably all of you should raise your hand, right? Motion sensor lights, usually people put them on the outside of their house. Now they're used on the inside of houses to save energy. And any idea what this super tiny chip in the upper right is? This is a big picture of it. In real life, these chips are probably the size of the white part of your fingernail. Yeah? Yeah, it's an accelerometer. It might be a gyroscope. How many of you have a smartphone? How many of you know that your smartphone has an accelerometer or a gyroscope?
Wow. Yeah.
What does it do? What does this thing do? Yeah? Did everybody hear that? It tells you what angle you're rotating your phone at, or if it's an accelerometer, how much you're moving this phone, right? That's a neat one, and we use it all the time. It's really cheap. All of these things are pretty cheap. Okay, now what about this? What is this? A what? A rip-off Kinect, sort of. Is this a sensor? Raise your hand, yes. Raise your hand, no. Yeah, all right, it's a webcam. What's that? All right, yeah, this is a sensor, right? This is a camera. And robots and roboticists are using cameras more and more as a very useful sensor. The idea of sensing is that we want to take information from the physical world, right? And we want to take parts of that information and use it. A camera takes in a lot of information from the physical world. So if you're using a camera as your sensor, the hard part is parsing out the information that you need, right? Like, how do you get the information that you actually want from a video sensor? And that's where this idea of computer vision comes in. Have you guys ever played around with computer vision? You know what computer vision is? Good. So I'm going to show you. That's enough of the slideshow. I'm going to go back to mirroring. Lindsay, can you bring the lights up a bit? And we're going to try this guy out.
Is that what you're holding?
That was the one on the right. I think it's the one we used. We'll check the other one, but I think it was the one on the right.
Okay, that's kind of a small image. Yeah, you guys can all see yourself.
Yeah,
let's get it so we get as many people as possible. Okay, so I'm going to ask all of you guys to be really still for just a second. This is the raw image that this sensor is feeding to the computer. Is there a lot of information in this?
Yes.
Yeah? There's a lot of information in this, right? The resolution of this camera right now, I think, is 340 pixels by 280 pixels. And each one of those pixels has three pieces of information, right? Red, green, and blue. So that's a lot of information that's being pushed into this camera, into this computer, 60 times a second. So can a computer with that much information just flowing at it, can I do anything with just that information? Is it actually useful to a computer? Can they make decisions about stuff without doing any computation or decision making about what to look at? Probably not, right? It's way too much information. Think about your eye, right? Think about your eye as a sensor. When I'm looking at the group here, what I read from the group completely depends on the questions that I want answered. So if I want to know how many people there are, I'm not going to look at everybody's hair color, right? I'm going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a very small amount of the total information that's coming in through my eye. So we want to do the same thing with this camera. So the first thing that we do with computer vision a lot of the time is do what's called background subtraction. So I'm going to click reset background. Everybody stands completely still for 1 second, right? Totally still. Hold on. Don't move. Okay, now everybody move your hands around. Right? Okay, so what's happening here? Does anybody have an idea of what's happening here? Anybody? All right, hold on. You'll see even cooler stuff in a second. Let me just get through this part first. When I click this reset background button, what's happening is the computer is taking a picture right there of exactly what it sees, and it's holding on to that picture. And every time a new frame comes in, it's comparing the new frame to that old background frame. And if something's different, it shows it as white. And if something's the exact same as the background, it shows it as black. Does that make sense? Yeah, so when you guys move, it's coming up as white because it's different from the original image that that the computer remembers. Okay, so now that we have this, we call this a binary mask. It's binary, which means two. It's binary because it's just black and it's just white. Next thing we do is we want to find the contours of all of these white shapes. The computer's really good at that because what the computer does is it looks at that image and it draws a line over any edge. An edge is something that goes from black to white, right? And it draws a line around that thing. So let's see what that looks like. All right, so you guys move around a bit. Let me make the minimum area even smaller. All right, can you guys see all those green lines around your arms and everything? Yeah, all right, let's make this even smaller. All right, so you get the idea what's happening here, okay? Now, in computer vision, we call all of those green outlines of your shapes, we call those blobs, okay? And the really cool thing about this is that the computer can identify each one of those, and it can tell me the coordinates of that blob. So if I'm looking at a highway, right? Let's say I have this video of a highway, and I'm tracking cars along this highway. The idea is that with computer vision, I can tell exactly where in the picture the car is. And I can track the speed of the car. I can track how many cars are on the highway. You get the idea of how this can be useful, right? And everything that we're doing here is we're narrowing down the information that we're taking out of this very complex picture, okay? Another thing that we can do is we can actually visualize the speed that you guys are moving. So I'm gonna click this thing, it's called optical flow. And if you guys all wave your hands around, you see that there's a lot of motion here, right? Things are going really wild. Let me see how I'm doing on this. Okay, I only have, 5 minutes left? Is that right?
Yeah.
About 5 minutes, okay, so. Any questions on what I've showed you so far? These are the building blocks of computer vision, right? This is really considered not that complicated, but there are very complicated systems and robotics that use these building blocks, one on top of each other, to make very complex computer vision programs, right? Does that make sense? Everybody following along? Okay, cool. All right, thank you. All right, so the next thing I want to do is a bit of a demo of a full system that kind of shows you how we would take information in from a sensor. In this case, I'm going to use the Kinect. We're going to process that information, and then we're going to output a physical thing. In this case, it's going to be sound. All right, so let me open this. Okay. So this is an almost raw data feed from the Kinect, right? You guys, have you guys ever seen a Kinect before? I'm sure most of you have. Have you ever used a Kinect before? Yeah. All right, I need a volunteer to come up here and to test this system out. You raise your hand first. Why don't you come on up? Okay, so who can tell us what a Kinect does? Anyone? Yeah? It's a sensor. Three-dimensional space, exactly. So if I look at this image and the background, what's your name?
Amos.
Amos. The background behind Amos is really dark. And Amos, if you can come closer, closer, and closer. What's happening to his image right here? Is it getting lighter or darker? You can go back again. Is he getting lighter or darker? Is his image getting lighter or darker when he gets closer? Lighter. So that's how we get data out of the Kinect, right? It gives us an image. Oh, there you go. So you already started it. So if you can come a little closer and just move your hands around. Well, you can try other things too. Computation happening already behind the scenes that puts a skeleton on his body, and it's tracking the what? What's it tracking? The joints? And in this program, what exactly do you think it's tracking? The hands. If you guys had a look at this feed right here, this is the information that's coming in. And we can see that it says left hand position in the world, right hand position in the world. And that's all we're tracking. And there are three numbers that it's telling us for each hand. What do you think those numbers represent? Yep. X, Y, and Z axis. So, Amos, can you show us movement on the Y axis? Yep. Can you show us movement on the X axis? Maybe keep it a little higher. X axis now. That's Y. X axis. Cool. Now, can you show us movement on the Z-axis? Forward and backwards according to this sensor. Come all the way in. Right. So we're controlling three different things with each hand, right? So who can kind of outline the whole system here, the whole robotic type system? Anyone want to give it a shot? No? Okay, so let's walk through it a bit. I'm going to open this up. This is called a patch. So what we've got here is we've got information coming in from this sensor right here, okay? And we're mapping the information, X, Y, and Z, to the frequency of the sound. Anyone know what the frequency is? That's like the pitch of the sound, right? The gain of the sound. What's the gain? Anyone? The volume. Who said volume? Yeah, it's the volume of this sound, right? And then this is something called a low-frequency oscillator. It's something that they use in sound synthesis to make different sounds. So I don't know if you noticed, but it sounded different when he got closer compared to when he went further away. And then it outputs everything to the physical world, which is sound, right? Making sound is a physical thing, right? We have a speaker, and it shakes the air in such a way that we can hear it. All right, so this is an example of a system. And this is the type of stuff that people in the art, architecture, and design world are taking from robotics and using it and applying it to their own fields, right? So this could be a musician, right? Amos right now is making music. He's a musician. But he's taking examples from robotics and applying it to his art, right? Any questions about that? Okay, well, that's the end of my presentation. So we've got a few minutes right now just to take some questions. Anybody want to raise their hand and ask something? Yeah. What happens if there are two people in front of it? Probably it would just track one person. This program is not, doesn't account for two people. Yep.
Best for what?
Best for making things general. Yeah, I mean, for a generalist to get into writing these types of software, I would actually recommend this application right here. It's called a visual programming language. This one is called MaxMSP. There's something else called Pure Data. There are a few others out there. It's a really great way to get started. As you can see, it's all visual, so you can actually see where the data is going. These are like kind of pipes to flow the data into one area to another. So I would recommend this one. Anyone else? All right, well, thank you very much. I hope you guys.